I think the only thing about being a leader that I think you have to do as a leader is have full accountability, that everything that isn't working is actually because of a fault of yours.
Yeah. Hi guys, welcome back to What's On Your Mind. Happy Tuesday, January 23rd. And since I'm here, I wasn't gonna do this, but I'm gonna take the opportunity to do it. Today is my mom's birthday. So mommy, if you're listening to this, happy, happy birthday. I hope you guys are all doing super, super well. Today we have part two of my podcast with the one and only Erin Deering. In case you're unfamiliar with who she is the co-founder of the one and only Triangle Swimwear. Do you guys remember like Triangle back in 2016? They were everywhere. Everyone was talking about them. I just remember it being all the craze and being like, oh my God, I need this. And as a little kid, I definitely did not get a Triangle bikini, but I have spoken to the co-founder of Triangle. So, you know, something is checked off the bucket list. Anyway, we had a phenomenal conversation. Erin is also the author of a phenomenal, phenomenal best-selling book, which will be linked. It's called Hanging by a Thread. It'll be linked in the show notes. You guys should definitely check it out. She also has a little podcast, which I personally love listening to. It was just so amazing. And her Instagram is also always popping, so definitely, definitely check that out. I swear I said it in the episode, but we could have talked all day. We could have stayed there all night just chatting. We're essentially picking up right where we left off with the last episode, but I really hope you enjoy it because it was, like I said, one of my most favorite conversations probably ever. Okay, I'm gonna stop talking. Bye!
Turning back to this idea of, you know, self-sabotage and the feeling of lack of worthiness and the feeling of, you know, resentment towards some people in your life, how do you think that before you had kids came up in your relationships, whether that were friendships or romantic partners? How did that show up and how did you observe it?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, it was always with romantic partners. Friends were fine. Friends were never... I was like, I had really good friends and we kind of floated around and it was all very easy and like very lighthearted. It was like, I've never really had a big friends issue, but romantic relationships was like, I would feel so abandoned. And I had to work through this with my husband, like, you know, and it was only even like a year ago where I actually said, when you go out without me, I feel rejected. Like, and it was just a pattern. And as soon as I was able to say that to him and finally clear it, it's gone. But until that, because different, you know, different things probably caused this. Like, I had a boyfriend when I was 18 years old that would go out and like cheat on me and be awful. And so I had that, like, you know, and so I got worried after that. I didn't trust anyone in relationships after that. Like, these things are very valid and they kind of stick with you and you hold that conditioning into new relationships. And I very much did that. And so I always felt rejected. I always felt abandoned. I never felt worthy of love. So I would always self-sabotage and, you know, probably play games a bit, I guess. It was always manageable. It was always okay. It would be like, we'd have these big like arguments and then we'd work through them and like, you know, come out the other side. But I never really worked on it. I never really dealt with it. I was just like, one day, it's kind of like, I guess, just all self-development work. You're like, one day this will just go away and I'll just meet someone that I won't feel like this with. And then it's like, no, it stays with you because it's not about the person. It's about you. It's what you're bringing to the relationship. And Zach, my husband now, was really clear early on with any toxicity that I brought into a relationship. He was like, I love you, but I don't, this is not how I, like, this is not representative of us. Like, this is not what I want. And so I had to very quickly address that behavior. And then some things just still hang around, like different conditioning. I mean, everyone brings crap into relationships and even friendships. And I think as a friend, I was probably always safe. Friend-wise, I'm like, I'm not a needy, like, I love being alone. So I'm not like a needy friend. So it's like, if someone's like, oh, do you want to hang out? I'm like, yeah. But like, I'm never like, do you want to hang out? Yeah. Do you want to hang out? I'm kind of like, and this is before kids. Now it's impossible to hang out with anyone. It's like 6 months in advance. Do you want to get a dinner in April next year? Like, should we lock it in now? But yeah, you know, I think it's just, I'm I'm trusting of people. I also trust people immediately. Like, what you tell me, I will believe you. It's almost to the point of being gullible, but like, I trust. Yeah. And so I just thought that was just what you did, right? Like, if you're my boyfriend or if you're my friend, I trust you. And so when anyone in a friend, you know, as a friend or as a boyfriend, which happened early on when I was young, you know, younger, and I think a friend is all my best friend in high school, I never, ever spoke bad of her. Like, I thought because we were best friends, that meant that you don't bitch about them. Yep. And then I found out she actually bitched about me, and like it turned my world upside down because I was like, but we're best friends. Like, I had such a pure, this is, I was like 14. I had such a pure idealistic view of what I thought friendship was, and because I trust people when they say things. And so it's like, I still do, that's not changed, but it's like when you break that trust with me, if someone does, then it's like, it's just, it changes everything. And yeah. So I became very protective of that. I'd trust people, but I'd be very wary. So it would be awful, actually, because I'm still trusting you, but I'm also not believing you. Like, I'm trusting you, but I'm not. So then you do one thing that makes my like ears prick up. And I then, you know, want to like just hunt you down and like figure out if you're lying to me. So like that was a thing that I think I've done from a really young age, which I don't even know where that really came from as a child. I think it's just a trait that I've always had, just a very idealistic kind of view of relationships, which I think is what all kids feel, right? Like, I see that with my children. Like, they're like, we're friends, and like, we're friends, you yeah. know, like Oscar, he's like, we're friends. Like, you know, he's like, and it's bless his soul, he's just like me. He said, someone was being mean to someone at school, and I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, yeah, like he was saying to him something. And I said, oh, okay. I said, do you ever talk like that? And he's like, it's so beautifully. He's like, well, no, I would never say that about someone else, because I would never want them to say anything about me, because it would make me feel bad. And it's just like the most simplistic view of an accurate view that as adults we should all hold true as well. And I had that. And so I think when you have that kind of understanding of friendships and relationships and it gets broken, it's like very soul destroying. And I'm like kind of looking at him like going, oh, babe, you're going to be just like me when it comes to relationships. I can see it's like so trusting and pure and eager to like just get along. And, you know, he's going to have his heart broken a lot, I think. But that's his journey.
Yeah.
He'll work it out.
I'm the same way. Of course, there's things where it's like, why are you going to trust what other people say? But for some reason, for me, it's never completely gone away. And I still, to many degrees, hold this childlike innocence that I don't know. Even my friends tell me, they're like, you trust people too much. I'm like, but what's not to trust? You know, I still have that.
Yeah. 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 I'm like, I would rather trust you and you betray me than not trust you and you be a good person. Like, I just would rather yeah. go from the angle of like, I'm going to trust you because it's just a far more higher vibrational way of being. Like, it's much better because it's like, well, why shouldn't I try? Why would I come from the angle of not trusting you? Like, I don't want to be like that person. That's a really negative geared way of thinking about the world.
Exactly.
You know, I'm always like everyone, like my friends are like, they'll always say it or any, you know, anyone, they're like, you see the good in everyone. Like, I'm yeah. always that like yep. advocate, but in a positive way. I'm not the other way. I'm like but maybe we didn't actually understand what was said there. And maybe she and people, and it'll annoy people because they're like, so their convictions are so strong in what they believe. And I'm like, but I can see the other side. And I'm like, yeah. I'm always able to see the other side. And I think that's so important. And I would much rather be like that because that's the reality of life. Like if you're not trusting of people and you're, you know, unable to see another side, it's just like a very, it's just seeing the world in a really bad way. Like you're just not, I believe that everybody is good and that things happen that may, I don't know if I believe people are born, I don't think people are born evil. I think things happen. And I think in a multitude of ways, and some people have chemical imbalances and some people are conditioned into being awful. But I don't think people are born evil. I just don't think that it really happens. And that mentality of not trusting anyone, I think is kind of saying that some people, you think some people are evil. And it's like, really? Like, do you actually think that this person is saying these things or doing these things out of spite? Like, I would say they're probably doing them out of hurt. or like not doing it out of being evil. There's some reason. So we need to kind of find what that reason is, because otherwise you're just like, it's just really toxic and negative and like not good for the world, I can't. I was like, can we just solve this? But then funny, because in personal relationships, I will, probably not think like that often, or I used to. I'm definitely the olive branch kind of person now if my husband and I get into an argument. But I used to be more like, in when it came to me, I was very protective of like my own space. So like if I felt hurt, I would just retreat.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to kind of, but I could do it objectively to other people really well. But when it came to me, I was not able to do it as objectively.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always harder when it's yourself to be that.
Yeah.
But my grandfather always like, that's what we grew up with. That was like the mantra that we grew up with. Like, nobody is bad. Like nobody, how you can't just wake up and be like, oh, I'm Medusa. Yeah. Like that's not how the world works, right? That's not how you're.
Yeah.
That, I don't know. I mean, I agree 100%. And people tell me too, you're too trusting, you're too this, you're too that. But why look at the glass as half empty? Why?
Yeah, I know. It's just so sad. It's like, why? Like, I want to, I wouldn't say I'm idealistic in my views. Like, I'm very much rooted in reality. I know what's going on, but I like to see the good still in everything. Like, because it makes me feel better about myself.
Yeah.
And like, at the end, again, that's all that really matters, is how I feel, because then I'm spreading that vibration and energy out into the world, which is much nicer and which is what the world really needs. Like, the world needs more happy people. It's like very simple. You can see it.
Exactly. And it's this whole concept of why be miserable? Why should I make myself feel bad when I can make myself feel good?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think, if at all, I'm sure it did, but how do you think this mentality served you well when it came to business and growing?
From a business standpoint, it was harder, because Craig was very dominant. And so he, in terms of how business operated, it suited him to take that on. Whereas my more nurturing, happier, less confrontational, more compassionate side was a bit of a superpower when it came to the customer, because I was like, we're all best friends. Like, we're all best friends, And so every customer that I dealt with was like my queen, And so I was able to apply it really well to that. And I found it so uncomfortable in business to have to be confrontational and to have to have this, it just didn't feel natural to me. So I really struggled with that, and I let Craig really take that on, like a lot. So so that was kind of, I guess, really simply, to be honest, is sort of how I took that into business. I think the way I operate is going to suit business more going into next year.
Yeah.
But it was quite hard in Triangle, because I was like, wait, do I sit at a boardroom and be like tough and be like aggressive? Like, I don't want to be like that. Like, I don't want to sit there and be serious and pretend I'm something that I'm not. And, I used to always find it really challenging, because I'm very non-confrontational, and I still am. And for a while I thought it was avoidance, and I guess it still is a little bit avoidance, because I just don't like people disagreeing. But what I've been able to learn and harness is not avoiding those conversations and still being able to do tough conversations with family or friends or staff members, employees, whatever, and doing it in a compassionate way, and doing it in a way that is a conversation rather than me talking to people. Because that's the thing, I'm so mindful as a boss to never, and it's not even a mindful thing, it's literally how I embody everything. It's like, I don't think I'm above anyone ever in life at all. Anyone, no one on the street, no one ever, nothing. Like, sometimes I might get into my car, it's a nice car, and I'm like happy that I'm in a big, nice car, and I'm like, woo, but like, I don't think I'm better than anyone on the road because I have a nice big car.
Yeah.
I just love my big car, and it's like very materialistic, and I'm like, yay, But like, I don't think I'm better than anyone. It's just, and I think about this often at the moment, because I'm building out a team and I am in charge of this team. But it's like, how do you embody that every day and still show up with the boundaries as being the leader? Because people need that, right? Like, I can't go in and be like, we're all friends. We just do Like they need a leader.
They do.
So it's like navigating that is a real conscious effort. And it's, I think it comes a lot to language. It comes to like the person that you are anyway, naturally, and then the work that you've done on yourself to embody kind of who you are as like sort of a leader. And it's like being non-confrontational, but being able to have serious topic discussions, serious discussions. And it's just like, it's just constantly meeting people at the same, it's just being at the same level, as people. Because the thing is, right, like, yeah, I'm in charge and it's my business, but I know you have better skill sets than me at like 10 things. So like, why would I ever go in there and have ego and have whatever? And it's an ongoing kind of process, I think, which I never got to do at Triangle. I never got to sit in a room and try and do it my way. I had to sit in a room and try and act like a man, or sit in a room and not say a word and have Craig do it, because I was like, which I hated because it felt so much like I was abandoning all of my power,
Yeah.
but I didn't know how to show up in a meeting and be me,
Yeah.
because it was totally not what people, and I didn't actually know. And so like then I would like talk, and I'd probably talk with too much passion, or I'd get too emotional because I'd be like, when do I say it? When do I say it? When do I say it? Bah! And then you're like, okay, this is not good. This is not balanced. I need to
Yeah.
find a way to express what I'm going through. And I think, in business going forward, it's really comes down to like super, super, super regular communication with the people that are working with you. It comes down to an actual genuine belief that you are not better than them. You're not walking around being, and like sometimes I can like you fall back on it. Like I have incredible team at the house. I have nannies and a housekeeper, and sometimes I'm like, oh, like why is no one doing this? Because I'm a perfectionist, so I'm like, why is this cupboard messy? And I'll be like, what is everyone doing? And then I'm like, well, and then I'm very quickly like, well, it's my fault actually. Like I think the only thing about being a leader that I think you have to do as a leader is have full accountability, that everything that isn't working is actually because of a fault of yours.
Yeah.
Like as you believe that, if you believe like firstly we're all even on an even playing field, and secondly when things go wrong it's my fault, because I rarely think people in their jobs are not doing what they need to do. I think that they're just lacking the leadership. So like once I got that into my head as a leader, that like really freed it up for me of being like, wow, well I better do some work on being a leader. It's hard. Like it's not. It's like it's so lazy to be a leader and go in and just yell at everyone all the time, which so many people still do in that space. Like they go in and they're like, for example, you open a cupboard and it's messy, and you're like, why is this cupboard messy? It's ridiculous. This cupboard shouldn't be messy. And sometimes like I might still say something like that, but then I'm like, I'm really sorry that I didn't let anyone know. It's like the cupboard needs to be cleaned. Can we work out? But like, I'll say it in the same sentence. Like, I'll write if we're on the group chat, I'll be like, "Hey, this cupboard's messy. It's really frustrating to find a messy cupboard." And this could work in the, it's like anywhere. It's just anything. Like small things too, because the small things that they build up. And it's like, can we work out a system where we get this cupboard cleaned? Like, let's work out. Let's like solution focused here.
Right.
So these are all things that I was never able to do at Triangle, because it was just Craig and I, and he did everything because I didn't know how to do it in my own way. And so that now I've had to learn, and I'll hopefully be able to apply it all in a nice way in the next business. We'll see.
We didn't get to touch on the dynamic between you and Craig because you guys were romantically involved, but you were also business partners. That creates a lot of, there's a lot of things at play, right? Like you guys are in a relationship, you have a business together, not to mention that you guys started the business on the second date, which is insane. Like that's amazing and like crazy at the same time. You know what I mean? So if you could tell us a little bit more about the dynamic and how things played out and your relationship even now, if you're okay with talking about it. Yeah.
So we got in a romantic relationship at the same time as we got into a business relationship, essentially. So it was never just Craig and I, it was always a third person involved, and that was the business. And I found that incredibly challenging from pretty much the very beginning. It was like a third person in the room at all times. And that was, I wanted to be the main attraction, and I wasn't. It was Triangle. And so part of me loved it and was excited by this prospect of having a business. I'd never done anything like that before. I was very much like a why not kind of girl. When Craig was like, let's move to Hong Kong to start it, I was like, great, why not? And it was, everything was like, great, great, yep, fine. And I don't regret that at all. I loved that. But having Triangle be part of every single day, all day, every date, everything, it was just always about that, was really hard on me. It's funny because he was 10 years older than me. So I was 27, he was 37, and now I'm 39. And I can kind of understand why he was like the way that he was. But I was so much younger. And so, like, I think if we were the same age and we were both in our 30s, it would have been very different because I would have had enough, I guess, yearning and life experience to be like, let's do this. But I'd never done anything. I was 27. I'd worked full-time in head office and, like, done some fashion stuff, and I'd never done anything. So, like, this was huge for me, and I didn't know how to jump into it. It was so overwhelming and scary. And so every day it felt like I was jumping into the deep end of something, and I didn't know what it looked like in there. It was murky water. Whereas he had 10 years more of life, 10 years more of experience. So he was very comfortable to talk about Triangle all the time, do it all the time, which is what I'm like now with my business. Like, I have to, because I'm so mindful of it, hold back from not talking about it with my husband. But like, I'm kind of like, like a lot of people are like, and I'm like, don't just talk about that. Like, just talk about other things. I've got a bit more of a balance than Craig did back then, for sure. But I get it why he was like, I wasn't. Now 10 years later, knowing how just passionate you can be about business and being an entrepreneur and the drive that you have in you, I'm so grateful that he unlocked that within me. I don't know when I would have unlocked it within myself. He like expedited it for me. It was like, oh my god, I really do want to do this, but like, this is really scary and I don't know what to do. So our relationship was always business first, romance second. And it got so bad as Triangle demanded so much more of us. It just did. There was absolutely zero time for us. It just didn't exist. I don't think we'd had a dinner together, just the two of us, for the 4 years before we separated. You know, like, we just didn't do it. Yeah. And that killed me. That was like no affection, no hand holding, no kissing, no love, no, it was just like two business partners that had a couple of kids and were sometimes intimate. It was just like awful. I just wanted so much more out of a partner. But the thing that is I never told him that. I resented him so much for being that way and dragging me into this incredible business, that I never told him, you know. It was like I just punished him and punished myself through lack of being able to communicate. Because again, I probably didn't feel safe to communicate it. I probably didn't feel like, and that was just, I didn't feel safe within myself. Like, it wasn't that he made me feel unsafe. It was just like, I did. I felt unsafe to tell him how I felt. And yeah, so it ended up just by the time Triangle, you know, I left Triangle and we separated, it was just, I was just like so ready to get out. Like, I was so ready to leave. I just wanted, I used to like look at people that were in love and like anyone, I became obsessive about it. Like anyone that was like at a cafe, like together or a couple, like holding hands. And I would just like have this pang in my heart of like, I'm never going to have that. Like, I'm never going to have that. Like, and I just thought I was so locked into my relationship. Like, I just never thought we would separate. I thought this was it. And I was like, I got the successful business. I've got all the money. You know, we live overseas. We're living a dream life. We've got two kids. Like, the love and that feeling of contentment within myself is the thing that I just don't get, because I was like, not everyone gets everything they want. And that was my thing. But the thing is, that was like a really big thing more than anything else. Like, the money and the success didn't matter when you don't have a person to share it with, or you feel within yourself as well. On top of that, that I didn't, because it was so much abandoning my sense of self through that process of like parking my needs, parking my, you know, feelings, that I couldn't sort of differentiate between my feelings about Craig and my feelings about myself. And so I ended up completely abandoning my own sense of self in the process. So it was just like an awful experience at the end of it. Like, I just had nothing. It felt like I had nothing. I had my children, obviously, but like everything in my life was just so empty by the time I left Triangle. Wow. Yeah.
We didn't get to touch on the rebuilding, because I know that was huge for you. You spent so much time, you know, working on yourself, working on your life, really. And I mean, you are here now.
Yeah. And I'm so happy now. I live the life that I always wanted, and I'm really proud of myself that I was able to go and seek it out rather than just complain internally about how I was never going to have it. I actually went and got it. Like, I went and did all the painful working through it to be in a place where I'm like, whoa. Like, I was someone that couldn't find gratitude. Yeah. I was like, I'm grateful for my kids, I think. I'm grateful, but I couldn't. It was like fake. It was like lip service, because I wasn't, because I didn't have any gratitude in my body. It didn't exist, because gratitude can't exist without a love for yourself. Like, that's where gratitude comes from. Gratitude comes from being so happy within yourself that you can then spill it out onto others. Whereas now I'm like, every day, all day, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so grateful. I'm so, even when bad, like, I'm so good at it now, and it's become such a part of my DNA that, like, bad things happen and I'm like, oh, I'm great, like, I'll be able to find a way to be grateful for the bad shit. Like, oh, I stubbed my toe, oh, I'm like grateful because I was rushing anyway.
Yeah,
I need to just,
a good reminder.
Like, I'm that far that way now, like, and it will never change because I will never allow it to change. And so that's a really nice feeling, to just be so grateful for everything that I have. And I always thought that meant I'd have to abandon my drive and my desire to work and my desire to go again. And now I'm like, oh no, I can do both. Okay, phew. Because I was like, I kind of thought it was a choice. Like, you're grateful, and you're grateful for what you have, and that means like everything stops and you just sit in gratitude. But it's like, no, I'm grateful for everything that I have, knowing that I actually still do want to do more. It doesn't mean that I want to do more because I'm unfulfilled. It means I want to do more because I'm so in flow and I'm so on path that I'm like, what can happen next? This is exciting.
I know.
Yeah, I'm like, what is it going to be? It's just like, it's going to be so, I'm just so excited. I don't know. I don't ever put expectations on myself. I just know, because I feel so good, that whatever comes of it's going to be really magical.
Yeah. And even if I'm scared, even if something goes wrong, what I always try and tell myself, there's been a couple of things that have happened in the last month or so that I'm like, wow, why did this have to happen? And then I took a step back, yeah, and I go on a walk. I started realizing that I walk a lot. As a New Yorker, you walk a lot, but you don't actually go on a walk. There's a big difference. So I decided, I was like, let me just go on a walk. You know, let me go on a walk with the intention of, like, I'm putting my backpack where it belongs. Yeah. I don't have my laptop with me. I don't have anything with me. It's just me and my walk. And I was like, I'm grateful that these bad, not bad things, but these stumps in the road are happening, because if they didn't happen, then I wouldn't grow. I wouldn't be better. I would be in the same place all the time. And how boring.
I know. So boring. And this is like the thing. It's like, people are like, I'm so afraid of this, I'm so afraid of that. And I'm like, but if you don't do it, like, it's like, you should, it's like, you got to do it, because, like, even if you make the mistakes and things go terrible, like, that is where the most growth comes from. And, like, you hear that with every single story from anyone that's had any level of success. They will tell you about a time when it was awful.
Terrible.
And they made a decision to go this way or this way, and they went that way, and they learned, you know, and it's like, that is, it's like, there's not much in founder world and entrepreneur land. There's no handbook. It's like, no one knows what they're doing. We're all just guessing. But that is one thing that every single person has a story about that's had some success. It's crucial to being happy and moving forward, you know? Like, I mean, there's no way this business next year, there will be, before it launches, there will be a bunch of stuff that I'm like, oh, I can feel it. But then I'm like, okay, what do we do? You know, and like, and then you look at it later and you're like, I'm so glad that happened.
Yeah.
Cause I always think it's the universe putting something up, being like, no, I'm going to show you this because you need to do this.
Yeah.
And if you listen to those signs and you pay attention, then that's where the growth happens. And that's where you make the better decisions next time, because you have all the stuff ups behind you.
Make
the better informed decision next time.
Yeah. It's the feeling of also, like, no one's saying don't feel your feelings. No one's saying be numb, right? No one's saying that.
Yeah.
You feel your emotion, but come on, moving on. And
it's like the key of all spiritual practices is to feel what you're feeling, but don't suffer. It's like every single spiritual practice in the world is that. Suffering. And suffering is really staying in it. Like, there's a point, you have a feeling, you have an emotion, and then you choose to either go this way and move on, or stay in it and use it to fuel every bad decision you make. And like, that's what suffering is when you go that way. And it's like, it's so simple. And I remember though, it's simple for me now because I live it, but I remember hearing that years ago when I hadn't gone on that path yet. And I was like, how do you not suffer? I don't get it. I remember being like, I don't get it. Now I'm like, I get it.
Now I get it. Perspective, right? In the moment, even I'm like, how do you get out of this? And then you get out of it and you look at yourself a month down the line, a week down the line, a couple of days down the line, you're like, how was I even there? You know,
it's I know. And I think sometimes people try and get out of it too quickly when they're in a funk and when they're going through a really tough time. And like, I've had some shocking times in the last 4 or 5 years, like awful. And they've lasted for months.
Yeah.
And you just kind of know. I remember last Christmas or the Christmas before? It was the Christmas before, and because Craig and I had a really long settlement process when I exited Triangle, amicable, not amicable, amicable, like just ebbed and flowed as all those sort of endings do. And my solicitor said to me 2 years ago, and probably this time, to be honest, 2 years ago, because we settled last year. So last Christmas was great. But he said to me, you're in for a pretty tough Christmas. Like, we have no good news. We were in a really awful time with the settlement. Things were really bad, you know, and he was just like, it's not going to be a great Christmas. And I remember being like, And you're like, and that's those periods happen in life, you know, like you just have these moments that you cannot rush out of and you have to sit in them. And there's no trick to feel better. Like, there's no, it's literally like there are periods where you just, it can be for months where it is really yuck.
Yeah.
And you can find little things in your day that are good. And it feels very challenging because you want to go back to all the dumb shit you used to do. And you want to go and like drink every night. And you want to like, you know, like go and like just do bad, just like bad things that, you know, are bad for yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You've got to just like dig deep and be like, no, I'm just going to ride it out. I'm going to go for walks. I'm going to just try and listen to some good stuff. And like, you know, and like maybe just watch some movie, you know, and you just got to, this is the worst thing about healing, that is why people don't want to do it, is because they want the quick fix. It's like, it is, there are so many awful periods during it, but like, to have done it and to get to where I am now, it's like, oh, I'm like to everyone, I'm like, just do it. Cause I swear to God, like, and everyone says it, you know, when I see people now and they're like, wow, you're glowing. Like, you just look so, and they think that it just happened. It's like, oh, it just happened because I made one decision and that happened. And I'm like, this has been 5 solid years now of getting rid of uncovering every little thing in my life and still doing it to get to a better place. It's like, I didn't just wake up one day and was like, I feel good. I'm happy. I love myself. It's like, no, it's a process. This is why no one wants to heal, because it's long. It takes ages, but it's so worth it. It's so worth it. Yeah.
Okay, I have like two rapid fire questions that I want to ask. Well, I'm sorry. I feel like we could sit here and talk all day.
I know.
Here all day, like, this is great. If you could go back and tell yourself something 10 years ago before you started the business, even like your 16-year-old self, what is something that you would say?
This is a good one because I think about this a lot, because you get asked it a lot. There is nothing that I would have changed to, because all of what's happened, good and bad, has gotten me to where I am today. And if anything was different, I would be not here, you know, like that's what I believe in. So I would go back and I would say to myself at that age, like, just do what you're doing and just do it and feel it and don't worry, just strap in. It's actually going to be really amazing. Like, all these things that you wanted to be and that you believed you could be, you're going to even exceed that. So just like, enjoy it, even the bad bits, you know. It's like, that's what I would go back and say. And I think that everyone at that age, if they were able to kind of have that belief of like, I can do whatever I want to do, I can be whoever I want to be, I just have to keep doing it, I just have to keep pushing through and like having a go. I mean, I was very much, I think one thing, it's like, always say yes to everything. Like, I was like, met a guy, start a business. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like when I was 21, I moved to London with like 3 weeks notice to like live with friends. I had no money. I was just like, oh my, I was like, yes. Like,
sure.
Like, just yes. It's like the more you say yes, you know. So if I was giving advice to someone else at this age, you know, because I was already doing it anyway, it's like keep just saying why not, you know, like yeah, why not?
Why?
Like, yeah, I'll do that. I'll try that. Like, why not? Why not? I think like that is where you will open up the possibilities of the world because they're not going to all take you down the right path. They're probably going to mainly take you down the wrong path, but you need to go down the wrong path to work out what it is that you want to do
Yeah,
in life, which path is the right one for you.
absolutely. I've done probably like close to 100, if not more, interviews. And the majority of the time, these, very well-to-do, accomplished you're it's the same thing. Trust yourself. And it comes back to exactly what we said in the beginning, right? You have to trust yourself. You cannot listen to everybody else around you because no, they're not you and they don't know
Not
what's
you. And then they've probably got their own limiting beliefs that they're saying to you to hold
and
you
protect.
back. It's like that thing, like never tell a big dream to a small-minded person. And it's like just keep it within, you know, like tell a few people that you can say your big things to that aren't going to think that you're arrogant or that you're this. Like tell those people your biggest dreams. Otherwise, just tell yourself, just like walk down the street being like, yeah, I'm going to do this with my life.
But
You
no one
know, that's it.
else.
Yeah, no one, yeah.
No.
Who cares?
And then one last quick question for you. What is the best piece? I feel like we've kind of answered this a lot, but best piece of advice and worst piece of advice you've received or have encountered.
Yeah, best piece of advice is definitely, I mean, there's quite a few. The one that springs to mind is about being a leader and about always making it accountable to you, you know. And I think as a parent, it's the same thing. It's like always being like, that's my fault. That's my fault. Because I think a lot of people are afraid to say that's my fault because there's shame attached to that if you haven't done work on yourself. But for me, I'm like, I was wrong. I was wrong. I was wrong. I was wrong. Like I'm always like I have no issue with being wrong. I have no issue with like saying it was me, it's my fault, none, because my self-worth is so strong and my foundational belief in myself is so strong. So it's like with that, I can easily be like, I was wrong there. And there's so much power in that for not only me, but for the people that I'm dealing with and talking with, you know, even with a friend where you're like, I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have said that. That was awful. Like that was really silly of me. And you just like, you see how it disarms people or you validate them even. You're like, I totally get why you're saying that. Like, I understand. I really do. And it's just like, huh? I think when you are able to, like in every conversation, I think, you know, like, and it's like, I think like I'm probably wrong here. And it just frees you up so much. And I think the worst piece of advice I've ever gotten is to act like a man, essentially, and to abandon that sense of self and like and just be someone that you're not. Like, oh, you have to be more confrontational. You have to have the hard conversations, and you have to do this. And it's like, I will get. And sometimes like they might be good too, but it's like I will get to things when I'm ready to get to things, and I will make more mistakes probably for longer. But this is my journey, you know. I think it's like, yeah, it's just knowing that like I don't like advice that's given to me that is just not aligned with me. And so that happens a lot, you know. And you just take it with a grain of salt. You're like, good, great, move on,
In
pass it,
one ear
like
out the
pass it
other.
on. Yeah. It's like, okay, cool. Great, awesome. But you know, even like the worst advice that I get given, I learn something from it. So I'm like, I don't really think I get bad advice because it's only bad advice if I take it on and I do it. That is bad. Otherwise,
Absolutely.
it's just someone telling me something that I don't really believe in, and I'm like, cool, awesome. Yeah, thanks. Thank you. You know.
That's another thing that's very universal that I've heard a lot of times. It's like no advice is really bad advice because it's really at the end of the day about how you take it. And you can learn something from everything that everyone says.
I'm like all day. That's why, like, best piece of advice I could like, it just goes off into tangent after tangent after tangent because I can't remember a quote. I can never remember anything. Like, I'm like not that person, but I can remember what someone said to me yesterday on the street or what I thought was happening. And I'm like, wow, look at that dynamic there. Like, look at that body language. Look at that. And I'll learn something. It's like I'm getting this indirect advice of like how to be a better human every day, all day. So like that's what I remember versus like the big ticket, like, oh, I live my life on these rules, you know. I'm too, my mind's moving too fast to remember those things. And then later I'm like, oh yeah, that's good advice.
It comes
I remember
up.
That now.
It comes up when you need it.
Yeah, it comes up when it needs to. The brain knows. It's just, there's just cogs in there. I always wonder, actually, I'm like, because you never know what other people are thinking. You never know. And I'm like, I wonder what my brain looks like compared to others. Like, am I operating actually slower than people, but in a different way? Like, what is it? Like, I actually want to get those, like, what's his name? Dr. Amen. He like does brain. He's like the brain scanner. He like scans brains and he like can tell you everything about how your brain works. He scanned like 250,000 brains. And like, I want him to do mine one day. It's like a bucket list thing.
That's so interesting. Oh my God, I'm going to search him up. That's fascinating.
Yeah, I know. He's amazing. He was on Stephen Bartlett's podcast recently, which is where I found him. And then everyone's like, yeah, he's a huge deal. I didn't know about him. I always think, like, what is my – because I always like to think I have a super special brain because it just makes me feel better about myself. Yeah. I'm like, my brain's more superior than everybody else's. I just think I – my husband's like, it isn't. It's like my one, like, joke. I'm like, my brain must run really fast. He's like, no, it doesn't. You just talk more. I'm like, that's rude. I'm like, that's not very nice. I think I'm special.
Erin, this was such an amazing conversation. I want to thank you so, so much for coming on. It really, honestly, it made my week. It made my month. It was so, thank you.
Thank you. It was I didn't know we were going to go where we went, but I love it. It was like, it's just really put me on a high for the day now.
Oh, I'm so glad. Why don't you take the mic away, shout out anything and everything that you want to shout out.
I always get a little, even though I love talking about myself and I love talking, I'm not a big self-promoter, so it's kind of like if anyone listens and they like that, it resonates, then like come and find me on Instagram. Essentially, I have a book out which is a great memoir. I wrote it really quickly. It was a lot just for me, really cathartic kind of project. And you know, I'm launching my fashion brand next year, which will be really exciting. I've so many ideas about it that like I can't catch them quick enough. They're coming, they're like, I'm like, well, then I want to do that. And then I'm like, oh wait, I need to write that down. And I'm just really excited about life. I just think that I know people think the world is in a bad place and there's a lot of doom and gloom out there. But like I don't think I've ever been more hopeful for the world because I just think that this is a sign that things will change. And that's really exciting and hopeful.
Regardless, your socials and everything will be linked in the show notes, but everyone can check it out. And
I'm not on TikTok. I can't get on that platform. I try. I'm just not there. I think I missed the boat. I'm such a millennial. I think I'm a grab girl, and I will have my website and that will be sort of where I am. Yes. Where I live.
It'll all be there. We'll be there. So definitely
it'll all be there.
Links.
Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of What's On Your Mind. And Erin, thank you so, so much for coming. I hope you enjoyed, and I really enjoyed myself, and I hope you all enjoyed listening to this conversation. It was truly one of the most fulfilling conversations I've ever had. And Erin, again, thank you so, so much. I hope you guys enjoyed, and I will see you all next week for another episode. It's either going to be me, a solo episode, or it's going to be a replay, and you'll see you next week. Okay, have a great week, guys. Bye.